Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News.
Greetings to you from high above the Milkpacking District here in illustrious and beautiful Southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge to be gleaned from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson, alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now, as I speak these words to you, working on the following stories on this Monday.
Wildfires threaten homes and structures in North Central Washington. A high school band teacher is accused of a sex crime. And Al Gore is cleared in his assault case.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that when this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed has drawn to a close, you will be left shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. Pay heed, therefore. I give you Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Don Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Monday, August 2nd, 2010. Several big wildfires are threatening homes and forcing evacuations in Chelan County. Is it Chelan County? Chelan?
Chelan.
I should probably find these things out before I go on the air.
No, it's fine. You've only lived here for 15 years.
Yeah.
How long is it you've lived here?
About 20 years.
All right, yeah. Chelan. Is it Chelan?
Yes.
Here's the thing. It doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things, because nobody else who lives here can really pronounce anything. We're all just bluffing our way through all of this stuff. Because everything is either named after Meriwether Lewis or after an Indian. And so in any event, the pronunciation is just a bit of a fool's game.
Well, the biggest of the fires is the Rainbow Bridge Fire, only about 2 miles north of the sound of a town of that I also cannot pronounce. Stehekin?
Yeah, I don't know. How do you spell that?
Stehekin. It's probably pronounced Stekin.
Yeah, that's one of those things where the pronunciation and the actual spelling have nothing to do with one another.
Well, it's on the western side of Lake Chelan.
Chelan.
As of Sunday afternoon, it had burned more than 4,000 acres of timber and brush, was threatening 206 structures, and it forced the evacuation of several camping areas. The blaze is burning within the Lake Chelan National Recreation Area.
Well, so the good news for you is that the town may actually be gone and therefore no longer be a factor in your daily newscasts.
As long as no news ever happens there again, or it just burns to the ground.
As long as the town is completely immolated and reduced to rubble, ye need never worry about having the pronunciation of that name down pat.
All right. Not all of the threatened structures are homes. The fire was creeping downhill towards some homes where fire crews are focusing their effort. Nearly 200 firefighters are battling the blaze in timber, brush, and steep terrain. A Clark County deputies arrested a high school music teacher on suspicion of sexual misconduct involving a minor. Tyler Benedict, a band director at Heritage High School in Vancouver, has worked at the school for 3 years. Benedict is expected to be arraigned in court Monday on 2 counts of suspicion of first-degree sexual misconduct with a minor. Sheriff's deputies have not released any more details about Benedict's arrest or said whether the alleged crimes involved a student. So, that happened. Are you okay over there?
I am. I'm fine. My microphone is sort of listing like 15 degrees to port. And it's sort of throwing me off, and I'm doing this thing. Here's a little glimpse behind the scenes, you kids. I'm trying to adjust my microphone level, which is difficult because I'm actually trying to adjust my actual microphone at the same time. The actual physical positioning of my microphone is a little bit off. And so Don and I were having this conversation before the program today that one of our microphones is being fixed at the moment because there is, I believe, the theory is there's a broken wire inside. And it's not sufficient that the microphone itself doesn't work. It's just that when it works, there's this sort of low-level buzzing that happens, which is a thing that is only noticeable to, like, elephants and me. But it's there. It's really, it's not there the way that like Morgellons is there. It's not there the way that like your crazy aunt being covered with spiders when she's detoxing from drinking Sterno, when they're there. It's actually there, but it's a thing that probably most people don't notice. I myself did not notice it until our executive producer, Bruce Agler, was kind enough to actually point it out to me. And he said, "Yeah, there's a low-level buzzing happening in your microphone. It's, maybe around the 30 hertz area. I mean, it's really low-level, but, I mean, you notice it. It's really there." And so once he had made the observation that there was a low-level buzzing, then it just nagged at me every single day. And so I called an engineering friend of ours on Friday, who, as we speak, has the microphone sort of taken apart in his workshop and is fixing said wire. This is all a long way of saying that, so now, it then became this thing of musical microphones where Don has the guest mic, I have Don's mic, and then whatever poor sod joins us later on the day for the Rick Emerson show will be on this mic that's sort of made out of just confetti and paper clips and hope.
My question is, if your microphone is the one that needs to be repaired, how come I'm using the guest microphone and you're using mine? Why aren't you using this guest microphone?
I think the answer is in the question there, Don. Do I seem as though I'm a guest on this program to you? Do you know something that I don't?
Do I?
Well, I didn't want to come out and say it. We've gotten off into a rather higgledy-piggledy start here at Legion of News. But anyway, so when you were asking if I was okay, I really am. But people who, this is one of those things that I probably has an equivalent in every kind of job where there's some small element of it or some small factor in your daily routine that probably somebody who works in another industry or in another career would probably not really understand. They wouldn't get how crucial it is. So if you work in an insurance office, there's probably some way that you need all of your office supplies laid out. Or if you're a carpenter, there's something you need to do with like your tools where they got to be set out in just such a fashion. And so with me, it's all about the positioning of the microphone. And this left sort of screw and nut combination over here has apparently been put together with super glue and hate and a welding system. So it cannot be adjusted. I'm actually sitting over here feeling that I've been bested by a 5-cent washer and screw combination. So that's what I'm doing. While you were opening up with the story about Lake Chelan, which is apparently gone. Where, it's burned to the ground.
Whereas I had that microphone set perfectly for exactly, where I use it, since that's, my microphone.
Yeah, well, those days are gone.
So
I wouldn't worry about that. When you get back, it's not gonna work at all. In any event, if you would like to listen to this program later in archived form, you can do that via iTunes. It's also going to be up here at pdx.fm. It'll be at legionofnews.com as well.
Well, and then the one that I'm using over here, it doesn't tighten, and it just keeps slowly swinging closer and closer to my mouth, and I have to keep... Never mind.
Hi, everybody. It's a glorious Monday here at Legion of News. And we'd like to thank you for being part of this broadcast. Don't forget, the excellence in entertainment continues at 1 o'clock with the Rick Emerson radio program, so you'll be listening for that. At the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
Former Vice President Al Gore was cleared Friday of allegations he groped and assaulted a masseuse in a luxury Portland hotel room in 2006, closing a case that could have tarnished the Nobel Prize winner's reputation.
But that could have entertained all of us for weeks and weeks, and for that, we are all poorer.
After a 4-week investigation that included interviews with Gore, masseuse Molly Haggerty, her acquaintances and hotel staff, as well as testing a pair of stained pants belonging to Haggerty.
Are you effing with me? Really? So after all of this, there were stained pants.
There were apparently stained pants.
After many weeks of us just saying, it's a bunch of crap. It's just fingernails or something that they're calling DNA because it sounds more slatternly.
Multnomah County District Attorney Michael Schrunk said Friday there was no basis for prosecution.
Oh, that's awesome.
In a memo to Schrunk released with the decision, Senior Deputy District Attorney Don Reese cited, quote, contradictory evidence, conflicting witness statements, credibility issues, lack of forensic evidence, and denials by Mr. Gore. I don't know about you can really factor the denial of the person accused into whether or not you're going to prosecute something.
I think we were
though, sort
of counting on his denial either way.
Because people pretty much almost always deny stuff.
Yeah.
Well, he said he didn't do it, so that goes in that checkbox.
Well, and he's a politician. He has the public to think of. Why would he deceive us? Well, I have to say that although I suppose I am Look, this is just my opinion, which is protected by the First Amendment to the Constitution of these, our United States of America. She seems like a nutcase and probably an attention-whoring drama queen. That's just to say this is my read on the situation. This is just, as a bloviator, that is just how I assess her mental stability, which is to say that it's almost non-existent, in my opinion. That being said, I was kind of hoping, not that it was even true, here's what I was hoping for. I was hoping for a long, sort of John and Goody Proctor-esque interrogation that just went on for years and years and years, after which he was exonerated, you know? Because then it's the best of all possible worlds. You know, it'd be like that Duke thing, where, what's her name, Crystal Magnum, turned out to be an unstable, you know, it's just an unstable slut, which we all knew. But then we got massive entertainment value by seeing, the unstable stripper versus all the jock a-holes, sort of, you know.
It would have been very nice to hear more of Hagerty's excellent recitations of the things that ostensibly Gord did to her in the hotel room.
I tried to pull away, but I found that except I'm actually making it sound smoother than it really is.
I was afraid to move towards the door, lest he become violent.
And I tried to pull away because he repulsed me. All right. Well, I'll dig up some of those classic Gore massage cuts later on. Here's the thing that we never really got to use either. We never got to use that thing that was, I think, created by some Japanese news organization where it was the weird, creepy anime looking like CGI of a recreation, like an artist's rendering of her story about Al Gore, with this weird.
It was like The Sims, only rapier.
That's exactly what it was. Will Wright's Sim Assault. All right. You are listening to Legion of News right here at PDX.FM. This is Don Taylor.
President Obama says the U.S. is on track to end its combat commitment to Iraq by the end of next year, but also said his move to put more troops in Afghanistan is necessary. He says that was the home base for the terrorists who planned the 9/11 attacks.
Is Al-Qaeda? Is
yes.
This the cut?
If Afghanistan were to be engulfed by an even wider insurgency, Al-Qaeda and its terrorist affiliates would have even more space to plan their next attack. And as President of the United States, I refuse to let that happen.
I wonder if he says that sort of thing just to sort of, just to rub it into John McCain a little bit. If he says, President of the United States, an office that I was elected to in 2008. No one else was elected to it, just me. This is Afghanistan we're talking about?
Yes, indeed.
I can't keep track sometimes.
Obama tells a conference of disabled American veterans in Atlanta that he's committed to stabilizing Afghanistan in order to avoid the Taliban taking over again in that country. He says the U.S. is on the offensive there.
What kind
haven.
Of haven? Let's see. That's
We will tolerate no safe haven for Al-Qaeda and their extremist allies. We will disrupt, we will dismantle, and we will ultimately defeat Al-Qaeda.
Whatever.
I like how at the beginning of this, he said that as president of the United States, he was going to make sure none of this happened.
Yeah.
Like he's Superman.
Exactly.
He's just going to stand there on the border with his hands on his hips, deflecting bullets all by himself.
Sort of. As the great Gazoo, I promise you that I shall no longer allow the... One doesn't wish to just be reflexively cynical about these things, but, I'm not going to say that it's a lie as such. I mean, it probably is, but it's probably a passive lie when he says stuff like that. In other words, I don't think he's actually trying to deceive us as such about the way that the war is going. I just think that he knows that, you know, that's just stuff you've got to say. You know what I mean? It's like when you go to somebody's house and they say, well, how did you like the beet souffle that I made? And you say, oh, no, it was really good. No, it was quite something. I've never really had anything like that. No, it was great. I'll have to get that recipe from you at some point. Was that marjoram that I... It was... And meanwhile, it's just like the worst thing you've ever had in your life. And, you know, and they know that you might be lying, you know, but they know you might be telling the truth. There's not really, you know, it doesn't really matter because they know that, whatever the truth is, it's being gilded in some fashion just by the need to be polite. And, you know, that's what's happening here. So here's a...
Well, also, he was speaking to the Disabled Veterans Conference. And so I think you can actually hear in his tone, in the whole way he's speaking, that he's taking a much stronger, more, you know, I am the president and I represent the government kind of a stance. I think because it's thought that I assume that they figure veterans will respond
Well, what are you going to do? Just tell some guy with no legs, like, war can't really ever be won, and there is no way in which this conflict will ever be finished. And we're just going to be recreating this same kind of dynamic every few years. I mean, that's not the sort of thing you want to answer. It's a big buzzkill. Yeah. Here's Dawn Taylor at the Legion of News news desk.
Lindsay Lohan has been released from jail, but she's not exactly a free woman. The actress was discharged at 1:35 a.m. this morning after serving 14 days of a 90-day sentence for violating her probation in a 2007 drug case. She's now required to begin a three-month stint in rehab. A prosecutor has said that Lohan cannot be released early and will have to spend the entire time in treatment, reportedly at Ronald Reagan UCLA Medical Center. The facility and government officials declined to say whether Lohan is a patient there. The paparazzi followed a van that received a police escort to the center after she was released from jail.
I think we may have cracked the code.
Her abbreviated jail stay was not unexpected, although it was considerably longer than the 84 minutes she spent at the same facility in 2007. The judge said during Lohan's surrender July 20th that she had no control over how long the actress would be jailed, but she did require her to serve her time at a women's jail operated by the L.A. County Sheriff's Department.
All right. Well, that seems to have been 2 weeks that, as you put it, just flew by.
It did.
It seems like they just... And I thought it was for... See, maybe I've got it wrong, because I thought it was for just for months this time. I thought it was like 3 months or 90 days.
It was supposed to be 90 days, but again, you know, when she was sentenced, people were saying that usually for female inmates, and it's like a first real jail time spent, they generally
except that it's
only
not, though, because she's, been in jail at least once before. They were just alluding to that earlier, that I think, wasn't she the one that went to jail the first time and they let her out in like a day and a half? Isn't that the thing?
Yeah, 84 minutes she was in.
No, that was at a rehab center.
No, that was jail.
I can't keep track of what's happening now.
That was her jail time.
It's all become very complicated.
Yeah.
All right, you're listening to Legion of News. It is Monday, and a glorious good morning or good afternoon to you, wherever it is you might be in these fine United States or elsewhere on Mother Earth. If you would like to listen to this program in an archived fashion, you can do that right here at pdx.fm later on today or at legionofnews.com, and it's also going to be available via iTunes at, iTunes. Here's Dawn Taylor at the Legion of News news desk.
Police are trying to determine if the death of a 90-year-old Tigard woman was caused by being hit by a Jeep at Tigard Town Square Thursday afternoon.
Let's try and figure that out right now, shall we?
Frances Johnson, 90, was moving across the parking lot with the aid of her walker when a Jeep struck her while backing from a parking space. The driver of the Jeep, Timothy York, 50, of Canby, immediately stopped his car to check the area, said Jim Wolfe, a Tigard police spokesman. York took Johnston back to her residence after she refused medical attention in the parking lot. York then contacted a family member to tell them what had happened. Tigard police and medical personnel responded shortly thereafter. After examining Johnston, medical personnel strongly urged family members to seek hospital care after the victim declined being taken by ambulance. She was taken to Meridian Park Hospital before being transferred to Emmanuel Hospital, where she died a few hours later.
When you're 90 years old, you're basically made out of peanut brittle at that point. So it seems like, you know, it's just a good bump on the way to the stove is probably enough to, you know.
Well, the Tigard police are investigating to determine if her death is directly related to injuries sustained resulting from the impact with the Jeep.
I do like the idea that she wouldn't get in the ambulance, though. That's just sort of a, you know, just sort of go out curmudgeonly. That's how I want to end my life. Uncooperative and snotty. All right. Here's Dawn Taylor.
Two California men who were cutting pipe have been cited for inadvertently causing a wildfire in Kern County that destroyed 23 residences and 41 outbuildings. The California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection says the pair were using a mechanical saw on July 26th when sparks set nearby brush on fire. The blaze grew into more than 1,600 acres near Tehachapi. The state agency says 47-year-old Daniel Gentle and 23-year-old Michael Kulikoff were issued misdemeanor citations for causing a fire using mechanized equipment.
Let me understand this. So these guys are in—it's not in a field, though, right? But they're sort of adjacent to a field?
They were somewhere that there was brush.
They're next to a bunch of dry weeds or something, and they begin operating a saw on a metal pipe, which then starts throwing what I believe the fireworks caution statement refers to as showers of sparks.
Yes.
And then they just sort of, you know, rinse, wash, repeat over and over again until everything was ablaze.
Yes.
Well done.
And then it burned 1,600 acres and destroyed 23 residences.
Ah,
but they got a misdemeanor citation.
Okay.
So
it is Monday, and hello to you. Don't forget the Rick Emerson Show comes up today at 1 o'clock over at rickemerson.com, where you can enjoy a full day's entertainment. It's really more like 2 hours. For the low, low cost of just 32 cents, coming up today, we'll talk to Oregonian music editor Mr. Ryan White. We'll also have today's top five songs under 2 minutes in length. That'll be coming up today. The top five songs under 2 minutes in length. We'll recap last night's... I've made a decision about True Blood, by the way.
Oh, yeah?
And it's not the decision you might be expecting. So I've made a decision about True Blood. We'll talk about that next hour. We'll also recap last night's awesome episode of Mad Men. And we have a Hick Watch coming up, as well as a Geek Watch. That is all on the way at 1 o'clock, the Rick Emerson Show. This is Dawn Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
Let's do our science news, shall
it's,
we?
It's time for Monday's installment of Science on the March. This is Legion of News right here on PDX.FM.
Crew members on the International Space Station may need to conduct spacewalks this week to fix the station's cooling systems. Warning alarms awakened crew members Saturday night when a circuit breaker tripped, shutting off power to the pump that feeds ammonia to part of the station's cooling system, NASA said in a statement. The crew is not in any danger and is monitoring systems and relaxing on an otherwise off-duty day.
Day never NASA finished. Said. NASA got me working.
Engineers are reviewing preliminary plans for two crew members to conduct one spacewalk this week to replace the failed pump, and then another spacewalk several days later to complete fluid and electrical connections. NASA said the cooling loop shut down around 8 p.m. Saturday after monitors detected a power spike in the pump that sends ammonia through the loops. The problem forced other systems on the space station to shut down. The alarms came 2 days after NASA officials warned space debris could pose a risk to the station. Later Thursday, scientists said the debris was no longer a threat. 6 people, 3 Americans and 3 Russians, are on the International Space Station.
That's another one of those things that you just instinctively... again, I'm not saying it's true. I'm not saying it's false. I'm saying it doesn't... There's no way to know, because even if it were false that the debris doesn't pose any risk, even if the debris posed a massive risk, that's not a thing they're going to tell us. They're not going to tell the guys on the space station about that. That's one of those things where you just... Just let them live in blissful ignorance until something collides with the thing, you know?
I kind of believe that they would tell them, though.
Nah.
You know?
Because what are they going to do about it?
Well, they're supposed to be all rough and tough and able to deal with stress, so...
But rough and tough and able to deal with stress is one thing, but there's just nothing they can do. Because the thing... let me ask you this. Maybe there's something I'm not grasping about the International Space Station. And actually saying that sentence aloud...
Well, it's the size of 5 football
fields. That's almost certainly the case. You know what else is the size of 5 football fields? I don't know. So my question is, if you just needed to get off the space station like right away, and you know, and I don't mean to just like duck outside the hatch and just float around with a little tether thing attached to you.
In case you need to smoke a cigarette, what?
No, like if you need to get home. But that's a one-way thing, right? Where the space shuttle goes up, and then they drop stuff off, and then they come back. Like, if you're up there... It's not like there's some escape pod or some crap, is there? In other words, if they told those guys, hey, there's a huge thing that's going to collide with the space station, ruffled temper or not, it's not like they can do anything about it.
No, I think they're pretty much committed to being there.
Yeah, and, just let them continue to, enjoy their nap or whatever it is they're doing up there.
The United States assured international negotiators Monday that it remains committed to reducing carbon emissions over the next 10 years, despite the collapse of efforts to legislate a climate bill. U.S. delegate Jonathan Pershing told a climate conference in Bonn, Germany, that Washington is not backing away from President Barack Obama's pledge to cut emissions 17% from 2005 levels. Pershing said legislation is the preferred way to control greenhouse gases, but the administration, quote, will use all the tools available to reach its target.
All right. Well, I feel better already.
Yeah. I think that's more of President Obama just standing there like Superman. Maybe breathing in the bad air, breathing out good air.
Ultraviolet rays bouncing off his chest as he stands immobile and impervious.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, that's all the science news. It's not a good day for science.
If it's one of those things that I really actively cared about, then I suppose this story would trouble me a lot more. But having divorced myself from any sort of emotional investment... in this, I find that I can go through the day footloose and fancy-free and not worrying about it at all. You are listening to Legion of News right here at PDX.
I do have more science news. Sorry, I got excited there.
You actually gave a little hoot of enthusiasm there. This is Dawn Taylor with your supplemental Science on the March right here on Legion of News for Monday.
A NASA probe orbiting the sun is finding evidence of other planets similar in size to Earth. Scientist William Borucki said there are more than 700 possible planets discovered so far based on measurements taken around stars, but more study is needed. That'll be telescopes.
I'm sorry, this is me. I totally stepped on the soundbite. One second here.
We need to look through these candidates with ground-based telescopes.
Wow.
And find out which are really planets and which aren't.
Are you kidding me?
Oh, I love him.
This is fantastic. Hold on, I got to hear that one more time. I got to actually turn this way up, though. He's a bit of a soft-spoken man.
We need to look through these candidates with ground-based telescopes and find out which are really planets and which aren't.
That is fantastic. That is exactly... Very often you hear a soundbite, and it's like the lead-up and the soundbite don't sound anything alike. You know, it's just sort of the payoff is not really what's... the payoff isn't really what you anticipate you're going to get. In this case, it is exactly what I thought I was going to get. What's one more time here? Let me just... let's
see. He sounds a little like that little wrinkly, turtly man from The Simpsons.
I know Hans Molman.
Yes,
is that guy's name? Why do I know that?
We need to look through these candidates with ground-based telescopes and find out which are really planets and which aren't.
That's wonderful, right there. Let's see if I can. And I typically don't overlap my sound bites this way from from one.
Well, he does say that they're getting new information all the time.
Is this called, what is this, information?
I think the biggest thing, of course, is the fact that we find so many candidates. We have over 700.
Oh my God.
We believe about half of those will probably turn out to be planets.
That's the best thing I've ever heard in my life. I'm trying to find my, I can't find the shiny voice. Where in the hell did I put that? Hold on a second. Everything has to stop while I find the shiny sounding guy. Let's see. I'm going through my.
This guy has the perfect scientist voice.
And to the point that he almost outstrips the shiny sounder, but now it's become like a quest. It's become oh, here we go. So I was. This is the thing I was going to do, but the guy's actually so.
Shiny, a slang term for great use in the television series Firefly and the movie Serenity.
But this guy is actually so.
We need to look through these candidates with ground based telescopes and find out which are really planets and which aren't. I think the biggest thing, of course, is the fact that we find so many candidates. We have over 700. We believe about half of those will probably turn out to be planets.
I guess at this point, we are only hopeful that the regulators will give us some clarity about the expectations, and then we can plan on that basis.
Shiny, a slang term for great use in the television series Firefly and the movie Serenity.
Awesome. Okay, what is that guy's name? I'm going to go find every piece of sound he has ever uttered.
Scientist William Borucki.
Borucki. Is that B-O-R-U-C-K-I?
Yes. Yes, it is.
William Borucki. He doesn't sound like Borucki. William Borucki sounds like a bounty hunter. You know, like some guy that we hang out with, Rooster Cogburn. Mm. I'm Rooster Cogburn. This is William Borucki. We're here for Ted. All right,
that was all the scientists.
No, one more time. I
think the biggest thing, of course, is the fact that we find so many candidates. We have over 700. We believe about half of those will probably turn out to be planets.
I love that. So many. I like that.
And it's like it's like he's doing something where he's inhaling while he speaks. All of his vowel sounds and consonants are sort of rounded off. As he's talking, let me just, I know I said that was the last time, but really I can't.
I think the biggest thing, of course, is the fact that we find so many candidates. We have over 700. We believe about half of those will probably turn out to be planets.
I love that guy. I'm sure that he's a fun-loving chap and probably means no harm to anybody, but he does kind of have a little bit of that serial killer thing,
And we seem to be forgetting the most important thing is they're finding new planets.
Oh, that's fine. Whatever.
There's a story here.
But if you had asked me this morning if I thought there were other planets, I would have said, sure, yeah. If you'd asked me this morning if I thought I was going to get to hear a voice that sounded like that, I would have said, no. Well, let me ask you this. Really, honestly, what took you more by surprise today? The idea that there might be somewhere, lurking in the perimeter of the universe, other planets, or that guy's voice?
Okay, it was his voice.
That's what I'm saying. Okay. See, I know what people are expecting and what they're not. Oh, that's fantastic. That made it worthwhile to get out of bed today. Here's Don Taylor.
The investigation into an alleged prostitution ring in Ashland, advertised on Craigslist, is moving to
In Ashland?
In Ashland.
Wouldst thou care to make the acquaintance of a lady of the evening, my lord?
is moving to the Jackson County District Attorney's Office for a decision on whether to prosecute. Uh-huh. Ashland police said Friday that 13 men and two women were involved in a ring that charged between $90 and $200 per appointment. A woman police said...
They can do anything now, Tom.
Said, wow. I'm just going to read the sentence.
She said, wow.
I'm going to read the sentence exactly as it's written here. All right. A woman police said was the ringleader, 36-year-old Annette Marie Wilson, has already been cited for prostitution in the case.
Oh, so what they're trying to say is a woman identified by police as being the ringleader. That's what they're trying to say. All right.
Okay,
so a woman,
good. A woman police said was the ringleader.
Yes. No. I understand the confusion. There.
Okay,
yes,
yeah.
She was identified by the police as being the madam.
That was poorly written. Police said they also believe Wilson was involved in a fraudulent charity, the Haley Foundation, that claimed to have an education and treatment facility for children with disabilities.
Okay.
Wilson was cited by Medford police for prostitution in two separate incidents in 2008 and 2009. In the 2009 case, which also involved Craigslist postings, Wilson was charged with promoting prostitution.
In incident the first, which took place in 2009.
It's a sad day for Ashland. So now when you go to see, Much Ado About Nothing, you won't be able to get a hooker from Craigslist.
You are listening to Legion of News right here at PDX.FM. Don't forget, coming up at 1 o'clock, the Rick Emerson radio program. We'll be broadcasting via RickEmerson.com. If you are not yet a subscriber, you are bringing shame on yourself and everybody you know, and there will be a pox on your house forevermore. If, on the other hand, you are a proud subscriber to the Rick Emerson Show, you'll be able to hear us talk to Oregonian music editor Ryan White. We're also going to count down the top five songs under 2 minutes in length. That's coming up today. We'll have a Hick Watch, a Geek Watch, although, to be honest, I can't imagine how we're ever going to top...
I think the biggest thing, of course, is the fact that we find so many candidates. We have over 700. We believe about half of those will probably turn out to be planets.
The thing about Hans Molman...
We'll have to bring him back later.
I've got more... The thing is, I've got more audio from him. I got like five cuts from that guy.
Oh, yay.
So we may have already peaked, or who knows, we may have topped out with that one. But that'll be coming up. We got the Hick Watch, Geek Watch, do a wrap-up of last night's episodes of True Blood, and Mad Men as well. This is Dawn Taylor.
A Virginia inmate who warned prosecutors he would kill again if not given the death penalty for strangling his cellmate was involved in the death of another inmate. Wise County Commonwealth's attorney Ron Elkins confirmed late Saturday that Robert Gleason Jr. was, quote, involved in the death of 26-year-old Aaron Alexander Cooper, though Elkins refused to elaborate. Gleason, who was already serving a life term for murder before killing his cellmate last year, has not been charged into death. Cooper died Wednesday in the recreation yard for inmates housed in segregation at the maximum security Red Onion State Prison in southwestern Virginia. Elkins is waiting a report from the medical examiner on Monday, but he said authorities believe Cooper was strangled. Authorities are trying to figure out how it could have happened because each inmate is placed in a separate, small, caged-in area for recreation. Elkins said authorities believe Cooper was strangled with a piece of clothing, towel, or bedsheet that was somehow reached through the chain-link fence that separates the inmates on the recreation yard. Gleason is scheduled to be sentenced August 31st for killing his cellmate at Wallens Ridge State Prison last year. He fired his attorneys and pleaded guilty in May, telling prosecutors he would kill again if they didn't seek the death penalty in his case. "I murdered that man cold-bloodedly," he said. "I planned it, and I'm going to do it again. Someone needs to stop it. The only way to stop me is to put me on death row."
I don't even know who to root for here, although root seems like maybe the wrong word to use, but I don't even know whose side to take. I mean, on the one hand, you can't just listen to every guy who's in who's in jail when he tells you he's going to do something. On the other hand, it seems like there was probably precedent, for believing him. There was probably some sort of there was justification for taking him seriously when he made this claim. I got a great idea just now, though, because you were talking about how they're placed in individual sort of pods, which is, I believe, what they call them on Oz. And like all men above the age of 30 years old, all of my prison knowledge comes from Escape from Alcatraz with Clint Eastwood and Oz, the Tom Fontana series on HBO. So I like to think that I know a lot about how to survive and stir. The thing about prison is, I think more and more of these jails are doing this sort of supermax type thing, where it is you're there in some isolated, some isolated incarceratory tube, where you're separated from everybody else because the raping and the killing and the whatever, and nobody likes that. And so it's sort of like a big habit trail, basically, that you're in. And that then gave me this. This is one of those ideas I have every now and again that I'm going to tell you right now. Here's what the idea is. And then you will say, that's interesting, Rick, but you'll just sort of write it off as being comedic or, you know, that I'm just saying it for entertainment purposes. Then we'll move on. And then in about a year and a half, somebody will actually do this in real life. And you'll think back to the day that Rick Emerson suggested this. Here's something that would be entertaining and fiscally sound, Don. This is how we could solve our stupid budget issues in this state, mm-hmm. and then also provide a little low-cost amusement for the people of Oregon. Are you ready?
Yes.
We put an there's that sort of bulletproof plexiglass stuff that they have at the check cashing places, you know, where you can see through it and it looks like glass, but it's shatterproof, but basically indestructible. You put a prison made out of that stuff right in the middle of town. And then with a huge moat around it, you know, and then maybe like some, I don't know, some landmines or something, just so, like, nobody can get out of there and so, you know, start screwing with stuff. So you have a moat, maybe filled with a carnivorous creature of some kind, but then in the center of it is just a giant prison, but the entire prison is see-through.
Hmm.
And you put it right there, and then, then you charge folks like $5 an hour just to sit inside and just, you know, on the perimeter and just kind of watch what goes on in the prison every day.
You could put those big metal things that you look into like they have.
On the Space Needle?
Yeah.
Where you put a quarter inside and it's like the huge Viewmaster thing that you look down to at the people below.
Exactly.
See, wouldn't you pay $5 to go watch some guys in prison just for, you know, like an hour or two?
Sadly, I probably would.
See, that's what I'm saying. And so therefore it pays for itself and then it helps with the budget shortfall.
Well, this guy Gleason, and I will say, yeah, I will preface this by saying, of course, killing is wrong. But
if sometimes amusing.
Or perhaps even understandable. Gleason was serving life term for the murder of his 63-year-old cellmate, Harvey Gray Watson, who was a man with a history of mental illness who had been placed in Gleason's cell a week earlier. Gleason said he begged correctional officers to move Watson, who he said sang, screamed profanities, and masturbated in the 8-by-10-foot cell they shared for 7 days.
And that's not as hot as they're making it sound.
He said Watson also got inmates to give him cigarettes in exchange for drinking his urine on the recreation yard.
Wait a minute. No, hold on. Watson is the cellmate, not the guy, not the killer. He's the killie.
Watson is the crazy guy.
He's the killie.
Yes.
Okay. He got inmates to give him cigarettes in exchange for drinking
his own urine.
In other words, they wanted to drink his urine or he was
drinking it for their amusement? He was drinking his own urine for their amusement.
But in exchange, like, how much will you give me to drink this urine? And they say,
exactly.
One cigarette. And he goes, no. And that one cigarette, I'll only smell it.
Yeah.
And they say five. And he says, for five, I'll sip. And they say 10, and he says, for 10.
I don't think we need to go into this much detail about this.
I'm just speculating, Don. This is the news. These are important stories. The people. This is for the interest, public, and convenience and necessity of the listening society.
So there was the urine drinking in exchange for cigarettes, and then, of course, the singing, screaming, and masturbating in the 8-by-10-foot cell they shared.
That was a bonus.
For a week. On the eighth day, correctional officers found Watson bound, gagged, beaten, and strangled.
Yeah. No. He had it coming. There's just no way to get around that. I was going to try to be glib, or I was going to speak about that in some sort. I was going to try to make a pun.
And there's the fellow in question that...
Is this the killer?
That's the killer.
Oh, yeah. You don't want to drink your urine in front of this guy.
No.
I mean, of all the... I wonder if that's just one of those... That's one of those stories that guys get together when they're in jail and they sort of swap stories. And if that's just one that's sort of put a period at the end of the discussion, or if that's a relatively common thing. You know what I mean? I have this one guy, and they say, let me guess, drank his urine. Yeah, no boy.
You hate it when they do that?
That's one of the worst. I've been with guys like that. The screeching and singing, I sort of anticipated. The masturbatory behavior, I guess I could have anticipated that as well, because you got to figure, you know, what else are you really going to do? The whole drinking his own... waste in exchange for cigarettes. Well, first of all, don't smoke, kids. I mean, if you ever wanted... Seriously.
That's the lesson we get from this?
Well, look, can you think of a better reason, a better example of why cigarettes are bad for you? Can you think of anything that they would hold? I mean, unless literally
people would say the possible lung cancer.
But clearly that's not enough of a term. I mean, when you're in high school, let's say, when you start smoking, you know, a lot of kids start smoking in high school, despite what the seven dwarves would have you believe. If that is a place where a lot of kids start smoking. Now, When you go to a high school kid and you say, hey, you start smoking, you might get lung cancer. How many kids does that stop from smoking? None. If you were in high school and you had to drink a cup of your own urine every time you wanted to smoke a cigarette, how many kids do you think would actually start lighting up? Dawn? Be honest.
The guy was
None.
In prison and he was crazy.
But that's what I'm that's my point. Is that
well, you know, if you start smoking, you might be in prison someday and you might really need a cigarette, and the only way you can get it is to drink your own urine.
Let us not pretend that this is a thing that is isolated simply to crazy folk. You and I both know any number of people who enjoy chemical substances of one kind or another to a degree that would probably make it acceptable to them to ingest their own urine, if that's what it absolutely came down to.
I hate this conversation so much.
Are you kidding me? Have you seen have you seen some of the guys who troll 82nd looking for whores?
Don't look at them very closely.
Are you telling me that they're giving some sort of oral release to a guy in 82nd is a whole lot better than drinking your own urine? I don't think
Please
so.
Please stop saying drinking your own urine. I should never even read that part of the story.
I'm just saying, if you ever wanted to know why cigarettes are bad, it's because, this is because what can you think of that I could offer you, unless you were actually starving to death? What could I offer you that would be sufficient inducement for you to do that? None. There's nothing. There's nothing I could do. There's no inducement on earth.
No. You're
so,
right. No.
All right. There you go. You're listening to Legion of News, by the way. This is PDX.FM. It's also archived later on today. You're the one who pulled this story, by the way.
I know. I just didn't really realize that would be the thing you would latch on to.
You are hoist by your own textual petard over there. All right. Here's Dawn Taylor. You can also get this show so you can hear the story again and again and again and again and again. Later on today at iTunes. Here's Dawn Taylor, kids.
Let's do the entertainment news, shall we?
Are you claiming that wasn't entertaining? Yeah, then we all know that's not true. Here's entertainment news for Monday. Right here at Legion of News.
Former trailblazer Brian Grant hosted a fundraiser for Parkinson's disease in Portland Sunday, and some big stars walked the red carpet at the Rose Garden. They remember me as a strong athlete, but now I'm battling something that the person right next to them might be battling, Grant said.
Wait, hold on. Paternity suit.
Parkinson's disease.
Oh, sorry.
Parkinson's disease is a disorder that attacks the central nervous system and holds a million Americans in its grips. Brian Grant and actor Michael J. Fox are leading the war against it together.
Did they really describe Parkinson's as, quote, holding somebody in its grip?
Yes.
I think we all know that's not true.
Well, I do have a little audio here from...
It's a tentative hold, if anything.
From Michael J. Fox, who was at this event yesterday.
Let me just turn up the...
Thank you so much.
Okay, whenever.
That kind of annoying thing. We were getting our picture taken backstage, and he had his hand on my shoulder, and my leg was going. So I was going like that, and his arm was going. And for a second, we kind of oscillated perfectly and just kind of became still. So it's kind of a metaphor for the way Parkinson's patients help each other.
They're twitching.
Here's the thing.
Work together to make him stop.
I understand that it sucks to have Parkinson's, and I know that it takes a great amount of courage and bravery and intestinal fortitude and so forth. We all love Michael J. Fox. I think we have crossed the event horizon. We're ready for to not see him anymore. That's the thing, you know. And so I hope that when the time comes, somebody will just pull me aside and say, "All right, you've made the point. Everybody understands that you're not going to take it lying down. Everybody understands that that you're going to look this disease in the eye and you're going to fight to the bitter end. Stay home. Quit getting on camera." That's a thing that I want someone to speak to me very honestly about when that time arrives. Which it will, by the way, because I'm generating sufficient bad karma here that I'll probably be stricken by it on the way to Beaverton today. So here's Dawn Taylor.
Well, sports stars and actors shared their support during the fundraiser. This being Portland, you can imagine who the most glimmering and glittering of the actors on the red carpet was.
Wait, hold on. This being Portland, was it Timothy Hutton?
Oh, if only.
Wait, hold on. Were you being ironic?
That's what friends do for each other, you know? So I'm here for them, actor Daniel Baldwin said as he walked the red carpet.
Oh, God, come on. Speaking of people that need a tap on the shoulder.
In addition to the event at the Rose Garden, the fundraising effort will also include a sold-out golf tournament at Pumpkin Ridge that was expected to bring in around $300,000.
It's some sort of cruel irony that they always raise money for Parkinson's by doing things that Parkinson's victims themselves could not actually do. Hey, look at us. Hey, we're all golfing. Don't you wish you could golf? Yeah, maybe someday. Good God almighty.
All right. R&B power couple Alicia Keys and Swizz Beatz have tied the knot, Keys representatives confirmed on Sunday. The two were married Saturday at a private residence overlooking the Mediterranean Sea. Keys, 29, a 12-time Grammy Award-winning singer, wore a Grecian-inspired one-shoulder Vera Wang gown. Her groom, a DJ-slash-producer-slash-rapper, wore a tuxedo designed by Tom Ford that featured a white jacket and pale pink shirt.
Wait, let me just get back to this business of Alicia Keys somehow having 12 Grammys.
Apparently she has 12 Grammys.
How did that happen?
Do you pay attention to the Grammys? No one does.
Well, not anymore. Yeah. And that's a thing that for a while I thought it was because I was just old. I thought it was some sort of an age thing. But you know what? I am willing to bet, and I don't know because I'm not one of the kids, but I am willing to wager, it would be my guess, that the young people, they don't actually follow the Grammys either. Because I did when I was growing up. You know, when I was a kid, I followed the Grammys, the Oscars, the Emmys, the whatever, all that crap.
But when you were growing up, too, there wasn't like VH1 and there was the MTV Music Awards and there wasn't a damn award show on like once a month.
I suppose. And there was only three channels. And so, you know, the odds were like 30% that you were just going to watch whatever. It didn't matter what was on. The odds were 33.33 repeating percent that you were going to be watching it.
Yeah.
But also, I think that there was... See, but this... Now I do sound like an old guy because I was about to say, and I think that the Grammys used to be relevant, but now... really, honestly, who out there can name 12 Alicia Keys songs?
I can't name one.
No. There you go. I mean, I know the... Fallen song, I think, which is like her first hit. Except then I always confuse her with Norah Jones, which I know is retarded, but it's, you know. Look, one chick with a piano is pretty much the same as another. All right, here's...
Well, Alicia Keys is expecting a child with Swizz...
Mr. Beatz?
Swizz Beatz. Is that his given name?
It's not his Christian name. I should say I am actually a big fan of that guy. Here's the thing you wouldn't know. We actually use some of his music on the Rick Emerson radio program. He does some of our bumper music. I'm trying to think if there's something that you would. Well, you're probably not. See, you're not a. He did a lot of Jay-Z or has done a lot of Jay-Z's bigger hits. I'm trying to think if there's anything that is sufficiently mainstream that you would know it, and probably not.
I'm an elderly white woman. I know none of these things.
Well, you're an elderly white woman, so you really ought to be down with Alicia Keys, though. That's the thing. That's who she's made for.
Yeah.
And you live in the suburbs, too. So you're like the Alicia Keys prime demographic. Well, because that's the whole thing. It's like every year or about every 18 months, there is a new soulful black woman who is created in a factory somewhere to design, she's designed somewhere to appeal to suburban white folks, specifically suburban white women. So
we call this the Dionne Warwick effect.
It is, but it's Dionne Warwick, it begets Macy Gray, begets Lauryn Hill, begets India Arie, begets Alicia Keys, begets, who is the chick that sang You Gotta Be? You gotta be something. You gotta be something. You gotta be wah, wah, wah. You know that song.
Yeah.
But again. Vaguely. So that's like while you're sipping your double latte at Starbucks, dropping some unbleached linen coin into a box to save trees. You can, listen to that on the sound system and tell yourself that you're in touch with Mother Earth.
Oh, by the way, in the text box, we have someone says, you're old, Y-O-U-R, you're old. Me and my friends all watch the Grammys. I'm 17.
Okay, thank you.
So there you go. I knew you'd want to know that.
Thanks. I just like the idea. Never mind. I was going to make another Swizz Beatz joke.
16-year-old Justin Bieber is writing a memoir, and it's due out in October.
See, that's fantastic. I sort of embrace that. I appreciate that. I like the fact that they're just going full speed with that guy.
Justin Bieber, first step to number two, forever, my story, will reveal the teen sensation's amazing journey to stardom. The book will also include previously unseen photos for fans afflicted with Bieber fever. In a statement released by the publisher, Bieber says he is, quote, excited to share just a little bit more of my world.
Okay. There we go. Here's the thing about that guy. I don't begrudge anybody for making it as fast as they possibly can. I mean, I know that there's a tendency to sort of to instinctively dismiss him or everything he does. But you know what? It is a short ride. So you got to try to make that dollar as fast as you can. And then just the key now is just making sure that you have the right accountant. That's the whole thing. Because all those guys, like all those David Cassidy guys, it was just making money by the zillions and it just never went anywhere. It went to somebody who wasn't them. And so that's why they're all still, you know, out there working at the age of 45 or 50 or 55 or 60 or 70 or whatever. You know, all of those like DeFranco family guys. Because it just ends up, you know, in some shyster lawyer of yours who just runs to Barbados with all your cash. So I hope, and I really do, I hope that he's making the right financial decisions, or that it isn't going to be one of those Gary Coleman things where his parents just skedaddle off with all of his cash. All right, well, in any event, I have no way to segue from Justin Bieber into this cleaning solution thing. There's just no way. It can't be done. It's impossible. Did you just hit that microphone with your can of soda?
Well, it's a microphone, and then it's got this big...
Like a $300 microphone.
This big black pancakey thing with the mesh on it in between me and the microphone. And
the windscreen?
Is that what it's called?
Yes. Well, in any event, if you perhaps work with somebody who's constantly spilling things in a studio on which you pay rent, you might want to contact Michael Beatty. He is the proprietor of The Cleaning Solution, a locally owned, operated business. They can do residential and business cleaning, and it's not just for carpet either. I mean, we talk a lot about carpet because that's the stuff that just sucks to clean. If you get tile or stone or something, it's a little bit easier. You can just spritz it down and give it a good, give it a good scrub. But, I mean, if you got carpet, the stuff just gets worn into there and it just gets ground in. And then it gets down at the bottom. And especially, God help you, if you have any sort of like a thick pile or something, not on you personally. If you got a thick pile on you personally, you're probably beyond help. Not even Michael Beatty can help you then. You are beyond aid. But you get that carpet where it's just, it's not like the full-on shag, but it's not just like the flat pile carpet either. It's just deep enough that it's like you spill something in there and you can't really see it. But it's in there, and it's just going to be creating a funk that just comes out. It's just for weeks. Have you ever done this? Did you ever spill milk on the rug?
Then
by the time you go and you get the sponge and you come back, the milk is gone. And the thing is, it's gone, but it's not forgotten. I mean, it's down there somewhere, and it's waiting just to ferment and curdle and just to fill the air with some sort of dairy foulness. So don't worry about this. Just have him come take care of it, because it's just going to be a pain for you to do it.
Would he clean the inside of the carpet in my car if I asked him?
That's, I would imagine. Well, he does in fact say stain removal, carpet repairs, upholstery, stone, marble tile. Pretty much if you walk on it, which I assume colloquially means if your feet touch it. And he says residential and commercial. And a car, you could view a car as being a little bit of both, actually.
Because that's my issue, is spilling the latte on the floor of my car.
Oh, and then it just, yeah.
And then you get that hot milk
soaks
smell
in
your car.
I don't know. I would imagine so. We should call him and find out. We'll do that maybe next hour. Anyway, so give him a call if you will. It's 971-533-3211. 971-533-3211. Michael Beatty at The Cleaning Solution. 971-533-3211. A proud sponsor of Legion of News. Don't forget the Rick Emerson Show is coming up at 1 o'clock today. We'll talk to Oregonian music editor Ryan White. We'll be counting down the top 5 songs under 2 minutes in length. Hick Watch, Keek Watch, True Blood Recap, Mad Men. Oh, and I'll talk about this goddamn baby shower that I had to attend over the weekend.
Oh, yeah.
That was a lot of fun. All right, there you go. Here's Dawn Taylor.
New on television tonight, because I know you want to know, on Discovery, Shark Attack Survival Guide. Tips for surviving shark attacks are dispensed by Green Beret Terry Shepard, who gets into the water with 5 sharks to recreate 5 scenarios based on survivors' stories.
I'm thinking of Terry Schiavo. That's somebody else altogether. She's not giving tips and surviving anything.
On VH1, the new series Money Hungry begins, in which 2-person teams compete to lose 100 pounds or more with $10,000 of their own money to lose and a $100,000 pot on the line. And on VH1's Scream Queens, 10 aspiring actresses compete for a role in Saw 3D as season 2 of the reality show opens. The judges are actress Jamie King, director Tim Sullivan, and acting coach John Homa.
Who is Jamie King? Why does that name sound familiar? Is Jamie King...
She's blonde, and she's been in a bunch of B-movies. She looks
Kid Rock's ex-girlfriend?
I used to always confuse her with Jamie Presley. They actually look kind of similar.
Well, that's a good thing. Man, I'm the biggest fan of Jamie Presley.
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan. What is she doing now that My Name is Earl is off the air?
I don't know. I hope she's got work, though,
because she's awesome. I dig Jamie Presley. She is fantastic.
Yeah.
And the thing is, and she could so easily not be great. She could so easily just be some other hack blonde. I think Jamie King is Kid Rock's ex-fiance, ex-girlfriend, something like that. All right.
And on Top Gear on BBC, former Spice Girl Jerry Halliwell takes a spin on the track.
Awesome.
Pink Floyd drummer Nick Mason lends Jeremy his Ferrari Enzo F60. And the Ford Focus is taken for a test drive.
By the way, this is a great night of television then, because Jerry Halliwell, she is that's my favorite Spice Girl, Ginger Spice, is far and away my favorite. And thank you. Is that American Top Gear even on anymore?
I don't think so. No.
Is that one of those things that they tried it and then they realized almost immediately somebody made a huge mistake somewhere? It's one of those things that did not need to be imported over.
The British show is.
Oh, yeah.
Terrific.
No, and I'm not even much of a car guy, and that's a fantastic show. Awesome. All right, is that our entertainment news?
That's all our entertainment
news. What was your first entertainment story there? It was Scream Queens? Was that the first one? What was your first thing out of the gate that you were talking about?
The TV news or the actual?
The TV news.
TV?
What was the first TV show you were talking about?
The shark attack thing, I think?
Yeah, so here's the thing about that. This is Shark Week, is it not?
It is indeed. I spent much of the weekend watching shark programming.
See, but you know those bastards, I can no longer watch Shark Week and feel good about it. Because they've made such a big deal in the last few years by talking about how sharks are becoming not endangered as such, but they're certainly being overfished. And you know me. What do I care? It doesn't matter to me. Things live, things die. Whatever. Things go extinct all the time. I don't typically get upset about that. But sharks, I have some sort of an affinity with sharks. They're such a huge part of the popular culture. And you don't like to see... the whole thing about sharks, I think, that I find really depressing, when they show these guys who are just like taking the sharks and then cutting their fins off and tossing them back in the ocean... That's one of those things, as much as I root for animals to kill humans most of the time, with sharks, it's like tenfold as much. Because we all have such a thing in our heads of sharks being so scary and terrifying, largely because of Jaws, but also just because they just are such amazing, terrifying, powerful creatures. And so then they've made this big effort to try to let folks know that the sharks are endangered and that they shouldn't be overfished and that they shouldn't be killed just for for jewelry or for medicine or for some guy somewhere can get a boner because they've fed him ground up shark cartilage or something. And they would have Peter Benchley, before he died, Peter Benchley was doing all these documentaries where they were talking about the risk that we run of sharks just being extinct. And they would have all of this video of just these guys catching sharks, and as I said, just like cutting like bits of them off and then tossing them back in the ocean. And it was a uniquely unsettling and depressing thing because it's the seeing the blunting and emasculating of something powerful. And it just made me very depressed. And so again, it's like I root for nature to kill man at all times, but never more so than when it's sharks. And Shark Week never has any of that. Never once do you see the sharks just turn on a guy and just eat him whole. That's a thing that would make me watch Shark Week, because now I just feel sad. It just bums me out. So I can't watch that.
I did learn this week, and I didn't realize Shark Week has been going on since 1987.
Oh, yeah. No, you're old. Yeah, all of us. We're all really, really old.
But I think I only really became aware of Shark Week a few years ago, so I really wasn't aware.
Really?
Yeah, I don't think I was aware that Discovery Channel has been doing Shark Week since 1987.
They were doing that when I was in high school, and I graduated, and I started high school in 87. So, yeah, that's a thing they've been doing for a long time.
No surprise.
If they would just have one episode, though, where a shark just sort of, and then without warning, and then the shark just turns and just, just takes off a guy's head, that'd make it all worthwhile to me. All right. Well, there you go. Are we done?
I think we're done.
Let's be done.
It's 1 o'clock.
Is it 1 o'clock?
It is over. The show is now officially over.
Well, now I'm sad, Dawn.
Well, we can do it again tomorrow.
Okay. Legion of News is brought to you each and every weekday by PDX.fm and originates from the studios of the Emerson News Network, the home of glory. At the news desk is Dawn Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Thomas Gill. Our executive producer is Bruce Agler and chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show begins next at rickemerson.com, where I will talk about attending a goddamn baby shower over the weekend. This has been another exciting episode of
Legion of News on PDX.fm.